Cockwood X Radio, broken news for broken listeners.
With the final votes tallied, let it be known that the motion to stop the creation of more clone troops has failed, and the continued manufacturing of clone troopers shall proceed as scheduled.
They've just announced a big increase in military spending.
Is there compromise or confrontation ahead?
Hezbollah militants.
China's defense budget is going to double from today's current level of about $119 billion a year in annual spending to more than $238 billion by 2015, a very rapid growth rate of almost 19% per year. And all of a sudden, in November of 2011, President Obama announces an agreement with Australia to house 2,500 Marines who will be stationed in the northern portion of that country.
As we end today's wars, I have directed my national security team to make our presence and mission in the Asia Pacific a top priority.
When I joined Halliburton, I knew I was going to work on some big things. We put out a few fires at work. Once ran into a small challenge of getting some supplies to our troops, we built bridges, schools all over the world. But the biggest thing, serving our troops good old American food. Great to go just a little closer to home.
Halliburton. Proud.
Selling guns is like selling vacuum cleaners. You make calls, pound the pavement, and take orders. I was an equal opportunity merchant of death. By the mid-80s, my weapons were represented in 8 of the world's top 10 war zones.
U.S. is attempting to use local, regional, Middle Eastern conflicts as an angle or leverage for expanding the U.S. Global empire. This is about making money for Raytheon. Raytheon is a corporation that makes the Patriot missile system. They're one of the top 5 war munitions manufacturers on the planet. Barack Obama's own former deputy defense director was a Raytheon lobbyist. So it's about the empire and money for the military-industrial complex. That's what it's really all about.
There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Democracy must stand.
Of course. You are right, Chancellor.
Actually, given recent events, perhaps it is for the best.
It would be best to die quickly.
You see, the victory of the clone army, for now, is the only thing that can lead us to peace.
Hurry up and die.
President Obama, people are scared. Will our military be strong?
I think it is important for all Americans to remember, since 9/11 our defense budget has grown at an extraordinary pace. Over the next 10 years the growth in the defense budget will slow, but the fact of the matter is, it will still grow. My friends in the defense industry can be assured that my defense budget will still be larger than it was at the end of the Bush administration. And as Commander-in-Chief, I thank our uniformed personnel every day.
And you, sir?
Since 2001, defense spending has more than doubled to $700 billion. And I would point out that every dollar of the defense budget is borrowed. There is no dedicated tax for the Pentagon. The U.S. spends more money on defense than the next 26 countries combined. When is enough enough?
I don't know. Governor Romney,
our men and women in uniform gave their very best every single day. And I am confident that we can keep America strong and secure in the 21st century. Spending more is not enough. We need to spend much, much more. That is why I have proposed earmarking 4% of GDP for our military and their patriotic contractors like Halliburton. I think President Obama is too soft.
I brought Osama bin Laden to justice for 3.8% of GDP. And I won't apologize for that. There is no difference between either of them on this issue. Both of these candidates are calling for more. To quote Dwight D. Eisenhower, our greatest military hero of the 20th century, every rocket that is fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed.
In video game news, Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 3 just sold its 1 billionth copy.
From the White House in the office of the President of the United States, we present an address by Dwight D. Eisenhower. This is the farewell address for President Eisenhower, whose 8 years as chief executive come to an end at noon Friday.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed 4 major wars among great nations. 3 of these involved our own country. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications.
What are we fighting for? Why do we bury our sons and brothers in lonely graves far from home? Our men are dying to preserve a way of life. These privileges, these rights, they're precious enough to fight for. Precious enough to die for.
The greatest force for good in the world, and we have not an obligation to go out and fight and start wars, but to certainly do everything we can to spread democracy and freedom throughout the world.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
What are we fighting for?
Freedom.
Freedom.
I think we fight because it's necessary and because it's right.
We're not talking simply about the price of gas. We are talking about the price of liberty.
We seek neither territory nor bases. We fight for the principle of self-determination.
America's strength and, yes, her military power have been a force for peace, not conquest.
By keeping our military strong, by using force where we must, America is making a difference for people here and around the world.
Our cause is just, and no matter how long it takes, we will defeat the enemies of freedom.
Addicted to war, why the U.S. can't kick militarism.
Yow! Look at all the money the government took out of my paycheck!
Later that evening...
Mom, they want you to help at a big sale so my school can buy toilet paper.
First no books, and now no toilet paper? Do they have anything at your school?
At the next school board meeting.
I'm sorry. The local tax base is declining, and we get very little help from the federal government. There's just no money.
What do they do with all the taxes I pay?
A huge part of the money the IRS takes out of our paychecks goes to support the military. Military spending adds up to more than half of the federal government's annual discretionary spending.
No wonder there's no toilet paper.
The United States maintains the largest and most powerful military in history. U.S. warships dominate the oceans. Its missiles and bombers can strike targets on every continent, and hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops are stationed overseas. Every few years, the U.S. sends soldiers, warships, and warplanes to fight in distant countries. Many countries go to war, but the U.S. is unique in both the size and power of its military and its propensity to use it. The costs of being a military superpower and waging wars around the world are high. Because hundreds of billions of dollars are funneled to the Pentagon every year, the government skimps on providing for basic needs of people here at home.
Let's roll.
Cutbacks in social programs have caused far more devastation in this country than any foreign army ever has. And
the path to world power has not been peaceful.
I'll have to read up on this.
Zabit Khan longs to escape from the vicious cycle of debt and poverty that has plagued him for the past decade. Khan, his wife, and their 9 young children are bonded laborers at a brick factory in Afghanistan's eastern Nangarhar province. Khan owes money to the factory's owner, and he and his family must work until his debts are paid off. That means 12 hours each day spent squatting in the dirt, making line after line of clay bricks. The Khans are not alone. Tens of thousands of Afghans are trapped by debts that keep them in perpetual poverty. It's a common situation at many of the brick kilns that dot the Afghan countryside. For the majority of the workers at the kilns, there is no escape. Workers who can't afford basic necessities borrow money from their employers, but the wages that they earn are barely enough to survive on, and not enough to pay off their debts. With each year, their debts grow and are passed on from parents to children. A UN-backed survey last year revealed that almost half of all brickmakers in Afghanistan are children under 14. While it's illegal for children to work long hours or do heavy labor, families like the Khans have little choice. Khan's 6-year-old son Asad says he and his siblings get sick and injured from the grueling work.
Propaganda.
Been telling you for a long time about the drone strikes and how they're counterproductive and how they kill civilians. In fact, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism says that we have killed anywhere between 558 to 1,119 civilians in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia alone. Stanley McChrystal, who used to run our campaign in Afghanistan, he even said, quote, "The resentment created by American use of unmanned strikes is much greater than the average American appreciates." When asked, the Obama administration officials have told the press that the war on terror will continue for at least another 10 years. We don't know what's going to happen in 3 years, 5 years, or 7 years, but it doesn't really matter because we have always been at war. George Orwell tried to warn us, if you wanted endless wars, and you're, as an example, a defense contractor who profited off those endless wars, and you can look at their stock prices before Iraq war and after the Iraq war and see for yourself. They made tremendous profits, and they gained tremendous value because of those wars. What would you do? Would you perhaps be interested in creating a situation where we never quite finish the war? It's that war that generates limitless power, impenetrable secrecy, and unquestioning citizenry and massive profit.
New unemployment numbers were released today. The economy added slightly more than 100,000 jobs during the month of December, and the unemployment rate fell from 9.8 to 9.4%. There's no question these wars in Afghanistan and Iraq need to end. But if Obama were to do that, end the wars tomorrow, and suddenly bring home all the private contractors and troops in the Middle East, guess what would happen? Our economy would tank. Unemployment would shoot up to Depression-era levels. And it's not just because of the newly unemployed troops and contractors. This extends to huge parts of our industrial infrastructure that would shut down because all they do is make weapons and war material. If we were to realize the insanity of a global military reach and start closing military bases and interests around the world, the unemployment rate would further skyrocket, definitely plummeting our country into another Great Depression. This is the consequence of not listening to President Dwight Eisenhower, the Republican, 50 years ago when he warned us of the dangers of the military-industrial complex. We didn't pay attention to him then, and now we have an economy based on war. We primarily build tanks and planes and bombs in the United States. And if one day the wars ended and there was no longer a need for these weapons, then our economy would be manufacturing virtually nothing. As an economic backup, I suppose we have our service economy, an economy built on speculative bubbles by millionaires and billionaires who have too much money on their hands, thanks to the Reagan tax cuts. An economy built on complex financial instruments, built on predatory lending, built on debt, and overpriced real estate. But those things have no real value. Nothing's actually made. And economies built on bubbles are always teetering on the edge. And we know what happens when those bubbles burst. After the Republican tax cuts of the 1920s led to the disaster of 1929, after the Reagan tax cuts led to the bubble and crash of 1987, after the Bush tax cuts led to the bubble and crash of 2008, when's the next crash? A military that overshadows our entire economy with endless wars and occupations around the world. A federal budget with an exploding deficit and no, and this is perhaps the most important part, no real domestic manufacturing base to turn to other than defense, because nearly our entire economy is completely dependent on this perpetual war machine, and we followed the insanity of so-called free trade. We're like a heroin addict, slowly deteriorating, yet too scared to stop using because the pain comes from withdrawal from the drug. Improvements that don't also depend on thousands of U.S. soldiers dying halfway around the world and millions of civilians being killed and displaced due to war. We need to check our country into a methadone clinic immediately. Wean us off these free trade economic policies that give CEOs their quick fixes.
Terrorism has changed the world, and Australia is not immune. But the way of life that we value so highly must go on. Australians are friendly, friendly, alarmed, decent, friendly, democratic, decent, friendly, alarmed, suspicious people. And we're going to stay that way. Our security agencies have been suspicious and will be providing you with terrorism. All of us can play a part by keeping an eye out for any friendly, decent, democratic people. Over the coming weeks, the Commonwealth Government will be providing you with suspicious information on how we can work together to be alarmed, suspicious people. And we're going to stay that way. Terrorism is our way of life. Terrorism is our way of life. If you see something suspicious, the Commonwealth Government will be providing you with terrorism. Our way of life.
Authorised by the Commonwealth Government, Canberra.
Hezbollah militants.
They've just announced a big increase in military spending.
Is there compromise or confrontation ahead?
We are now spending more than we did at the peak of Vietnam. A lot of what's going on is simply because people don't understand the larger architecture of how the Pentagon operates.
Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee, I am the U.S. Air Force Program Manager for the Boeing Company.
Let's use the example of buying a weapon like a new fighter plane for the Air Force. The action usually starts in the Pentagon, maybe at the contractor's initiatives, but essentially everybody's working together.
The KC-767A can carry up to 190 troops.
Basically what you do is you come in and you lowball the initial estimate.
The actual then-year cost is about half that estimate.
You overpromise what it's going to do, and you underestimate the kind of burdens it's going to impose.
We separately met with the companies, and both proposals very good. Both.
Once the Air Force buys off on it, then you start flooding money to as many congressional districts as possible, as quickly as possible.
The B-2 bomber has a piece of it made in every single state to make sure that if you ever tried to phase that project out, you will get howls, howls from among the most liberal members of Congress.
I believe in this military. I am urging the Senate to support this bill. $66 billion for our men and women in uniform.
Well, I just want to thank the chairman for working with me and adding $100 million to upgrade 10 additional B-1 bombers.
And that B-1 has been a great asset for the projection of power.
The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, the F-22 Raptor.
Because the military-industrial complex is not two links, it's three. It's the military and the industry and Congress. For a congressman, defense spending means jobs.
Humvees are manufactured in my district in Mishawaka, Indiana by...
Losing 100 defense jobs in his district could mean 500 votes. It's not just the 100 workers, it's their spouses, it's their children. It's the representative's duty to bring home the bacon.
I am also grateful for the work that the House Armed Services Committee has done to fully fund the FA-22 program this year.
God bless our contractors.
It is our conclusion that the Lockheed Martin team is the winner of the Joint Strike Fighter program.
We have a snapshot in time after September 11th where at least 71 companies that we were able to identify are starting to get contracts to go in Afghanistan and Iraq. All of the top 10 companies had former U.S. officials who had worked in the Pentagon or other parts of the U.S. government on their boards of directors or as their top executives. It's known as the revolving door, and people cash in all the time. Public officials go to work for companies and they make triple, quadruple, 10 times, sometimes as much money as they used to make in public service.
There is too close a relationship, and there is outright, I hate to use the word corruption, but it borders on it, the behavior of some of these individuals, both in industry and in the Pentagon.
The number one recipient of contracts was Vice President Cheney's former company, Halliburton, and its subsidiary, Kellogg Brown & Root.
KBR, we're the Army's contractor on the battlefield. Currently 65,000 KBR people around the world assisting the troops. 10 of what?
You know, the military-industrial complex isn't just the people in the Pentagon and the people producing the weapons. It's now increasingly got a very large service sector.
Ham and eggs.
Things that troops used to do, like peel potatoes and do laundry, we now have contractors doing.
Somebody has to do this work. And the Halliburton thing is just an outrageous effort to associate the vice president with the activities of a company with which he has no connection. No connection at all.
Congressional critics are questioning whether Dick Cheney helped Halliburton get billions.
The FBI has revealed it is expanding its investigation into how Halliburton Company billed taxpayers for its contract work in Iraq.
And it now appears some of those contracts were awarded with the knowledge and approval of the vice president's office, which would seem to contradict his previous statements.
I have absolutely no influence of, involvement of, knowledge of, in any way, shape, or form of contracts.
We did a report that took 2.5 years, $600,000, 33 people, including 10 investigative reporters on six continents, looking at private military companies and outsourcing war all over the world. And we noticed that in 1992, there was a contract of $9 million given out to a company, Kellogg Brown and Root, to study the idea, should the Pentagon start using the private sector to do some of the support-type functions like food service, latrine duty, but even maybe some military things as well. And the Secretary of Defense at the time was one Dick Cheney. So Cheney gives the contract out. Kellogg Brown and Root comes back and says, this is a terrific idea. The next 10 years, they get 700 or 800 contracts to do just that.
Well, I ran Halliburton. I'm proud of it. Halliburton's a quintessential.
This company brought in a Rolodex guy, a former U.S. congressman, defense secretary, chief of staff to a president, to make sure that he could get doors opened not only in Washington but in capitals all over the world. And yes, he becomes personally wealthy from that. No question about it. His net worth went from $1 million or less to $60 or $70 million in the span of 5 years.
Are you ready to take the oath?
I am.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me.
So we elected a government contractor as vice president.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
This could be Indonesia, sounds like Russia, Nigeria. No, it's the United States of America. And everything I just said is entirely legal, and it is our system of legal corruption.
If I am sure of anything, I'm sure of this. Vice President Cheney had nothing to do with the award of any contract to Halliburton. He wouldn't pick up the phone. He wouldn't whisper in someone's ear, I know him. He just wouldn't do it.
It looks bad. It looks bad. And apparently Halliburton more than once has overcharged the federal government. That's wrong.
You don't have to show that he directly came in and hit the cash register button, the door flew open, and he took some money out and put it in his pocket. It's to say anybody allocating things at the Department of Defense knows who the vice president is, knows what his connections are in Halliburton.
We have a process that has a seamlessness where the corporate interests that stand to benefit are so intertwined and interwoven with the political forces that the financial elites and the political elites have become the same people.
You do have to follow the money. If you follow the money here, it's not so much that Halliburton wanted a war, so they told Dick Cheney to go get one for him. It wasn't that. But you do get a willingness to go to war.
Ayes are 296. The nays are 133. The joint resolution is passed without objection.
You get a willingness to look at the cost-benefit scenario. American people who have a son or a daughter that's going to be deployed and maybe shot at, maybe killed or maimed in Iraq, they look at the cost-benefit and they go, I don't think that's good. But when politicians who understand contracts, future contracts, when they look at war, they have a different cost-benefit analysis.
The defense budget is $750 billion. Profits went up last year well over 25%. I guarantee you, when war becomes that profitable, you're going to see more of it.
Talk with X-Radio, broken news for broken listeners.
Details of this show and other shows of the Kaput X-Radio series can be found at radioforall.net.
As we end today's wars,
because a child watches over 1,500 murders before he's 12 years old.